So we're talking about GoldenEye tonight here on the It's So Bad podcast. Chris and Dan. Hello, Dan. He waved at me physically.
Hello, Mike.
It was intimidating. You guys are both veterans here of the podcast.
That's right. Grizzled.
Grizzled veterans. You actually, I think, have the record for most appearances.
You're damn right I do.
Chris, and how many appearances have... So you've been on River City Ransom.
No Mercy.
No Mercy.
Final Fantasy VI.
Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
So this is your fourth podcast.
Congratulations.
Right. Yep.
Congratulations. Thanks. Golf clap.
First of four, baby.
Yep.
First of four.
And you also, Dan, are a veteran here.
Yes, making my second appearance on the show tonight.
The second appearance.
Very excited.
Oh. But yeah, so we are talking about the N64 game called GoldenEye, the Nintendo 64, also known as the Ultra 64 before it came out. Came out in 1996, the N64. In August of 1997, August 25th, actually... We're recording right now on the last day of August, and it's which anniversary is it? Can we do math here? 21st anniversary of GoldenEye. We're talking about the game known as GoldenEye, the licensed property that was about a movie.
James Bond movie. That came out like a year before.
Yeah. So it came out a year before, developed by a company called Rare. So are you guys familiar with Rare?
Of course, Mike.
Back in the day, when you bought a game, did you know who Rare was in 1996, 1995?
I did. I remember that silly little logo. Now, I could be wrong, but Donkey Kong Country
would
be my earliest remembrance of such a title.
Yes, yes. I remember I specifically, one of the first developers that I was like, Rare is awesome, and I am going to buy everything that they do after Donkey Kong Country, because I think I actually, for some reason, was on a mailing list. And did you guys ever receive the VHS tapes of the previews of games?
No.
No.
Really?
No. No, I did have some from Child's World.
Maybe a GamePro
thing? No, straight Nintendo. I got a VHS from Nintendo that previewed Donkey Kong Country.
Well...
And also, I think I had one for, I'm trying to remember, Star Fox 64, and I think Banjo-Kazooie.
Wow.
Hmm.
Banjo-Kazooie got quite the push out of the
game. They did. Was that a Rare game? I don't think that was a Rare game.
If you told me it was, I'd believe you.
Yeah. So, yes, I got these VHS tapes. I remember also back in like 89 or 90... My grandparents took me into the North End for St. Anthony's Feast, which actually just happened.
Manja!
Last week. And there was a flatbed truck that had on it consoles, television screens of TurboGrafx-16.
Those screens must have been huge.
So they had three screens that you could go and play TurboGrafx-16 games on. And I remember playing some, and they gave me a VHS tape of being like, check out this rad TurboGrafx-16 system that's coming out. So I have VHS tapes of TurboGrafx-16, Donkey Kong Country, and whatever those things were that Nintendo sent out. And I think it's because when I bought my Super Nintendo, it had... Do you remember that you could buy Super Mario World pack-in, and then it came with a sticker that you mailed away to get Super Mario All-Stars?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
So I mailed that in, and I got Super Mario All-Stars from Nintendo.
For free?
Yes.
What the fuck?
That was the thing that happened in like 1991 or 92.
Wild times.
That's how you got Super Mario All-Stars.
I remember wanting Mario All-Stars. So, like the actual, you know, it came out and...
I didn't have 60 bucks to buy it. What a plebe. What an idiot I was.
I think they originally came out of...
Plebe.
The first 2 years they had the pack-in with Super Mario World, and then they added a sticker on it that said, mail this in and you'll get Super Mario All-Stars.
See, I think I was too original, bro. I think I got my SNES right out of the gate, and I didn't have that silly little sticker on there.
Yeah, yeah. So I did. Yeah. And so...
What else was on these TurboGrafx snuff films?
Yeah, I don't know. I still have it. My parents have it. I've seen it.
I'm sure there's a fucking treasure trove.
Do they still watch it?
It's on YouTube. I looked it up. I actually looked it up on eBay. I'm like, how much can I sell this for? And it was only like $30. So I was like, fuck it. I'll keep it.
Keep it. Get rid of that piece of shit. $30. Type is $30.
If it was like $100, I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'm selling this VHS tape.
No, you'd buy a glass case for it and lean it in there. Well,
you'd be like, Pat the NES Punk.
I'd sell it, and then I'd immediately use that money to buy more games. So that's where I am.
One addiction fuels another.
Kumsi kumsa.
Let's talk about GoldenEye. So GoldenEye came out, Rare developed a couple games. They developed Donkey Kong Country.
Turok.
Killer Instinct. They did not develop Turok.
Who did Turok?
I don't know.
Rare.
Bunch of assholes.
No. Rare did not take a sip.
I think it was Rare.
So, GoldenEye comes out in 1997, August of 1997. What's your history with the game? Do you remember getting it back in the day?
I do not remember getting it. I remember my first time playing it. I was my mom's best friend Mindy, her son Jesse got it. And I remember going over there, and there was this big talk, Golden Gun, you guys ready? Golden Gun. And I'm sitting there clueless, what's going on? And we walk in, start playing GoldenEye. It was over.
Yeah.
I knew, okay, put it on my Christmas list. I'm good with this.
I don't remember my first time, clearly, but I just remember doing the multiplayer with the first time four of us. Got together and did the multiplayer. I was like, holy shit,
Was I there back in the day?
And you probably were. Whether it was like the original four or whatever, I mean, all of us in this room and many of our other mutual friends and stuff like that, like, we all played some combination, the four of us.
Yes.
And just doing that for like hours. We were probably bouncing between that and No Mercy. Like, throughout the night, probably.
Well, No Mercy was definitely not out then.
No. We just did multiplayer GoldenEye. Oh, like after that, for years.
Yeah. So actually, WCW NWO World Tour came out in December of that year.
Oh, so we were definitely doing that because I remember beating both those games to death with friends when those were out.
So this is actually the 21st N64 game to come out. Because N64 had shit support for games. So this is almost a year after the N64 came out, because it came out in September of 1996. And then this game comes out in August of 97. A month before this, Star Fox 64 came out.
Oh, yeah.
And that had the four-player mode that we played the shit out of, but it wasn't, like, that great. And then this game comes out and it's like four player is mind blowing.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of four player games at this point, because N64 changed the game with four player.
You had Gretzky 3D Hockey.
It did come out.
Which was four players. I mean, you know, if you get four dudes over there to play at the same time, it's fantastic, but it's, you know, it can be challenging at points.
But we are also sitting up here in Boston where people give a shit about hockey. And if, like, you're outside of Boston and you're talking about hockey, it's like, what the fuck is a Wayne Gretzky? So,
a couple of summers ago, in fact, all of us, we hooked that game up to a projector and played it on the side of one of our friends' houses.
I still play it. So
yeah, we absolutely still play it. That's what I'm saying.
It's got to be in my top five N64 titles, without a doubt. Not to get too off track.
For me, that game is almost... equivalent to NBA Jam.
Right. Well, yes, like, you when you hear the language in the game, you know, ooh, what a mugging. All that good stuff.
Yeah.
I would go so far to say that the Nintendo 64 is probably starting to get stale for me at that point. Because I feel like I didn't have a ton of Nintendo 64 games at that point. I was probably just playing, like, Shadows of the Empire and Star Fox, like, over and over again.
Yeah.
Until GoldenEye came out. Then WCW versus the NWO.
I mean, there were just no releases. So there was...
But Mario was so challenging at the time.
And it was so good. It was really so good.
It took... I don't remember having any issue. Because I remember it took me 6 months to get 70 stars or 120 or whatever.
That game was mind-blowing. Like, it was just so above and beyond anything that had happened before that.
Right.
Because of the 3D, the moving of the camera. It was just, like, revolutionary. And then you wait a year, and there's a bunch of shit that comes out. I mean, but as somebody who was 13 at the time, I didn't care because I couldn't afford everything. So, I mean, I was playing. Yep. I also had Super Mario 64. I had Pilot Wings. The only time I've ever gotten both launch games, at wow. the when it came out. So
Isn't Shazzy a pirate launch game?
No, it was the Christmas game.
Yeah, by Christmas they only had six titles, I think.
Oh, okay.
Above 96.
Mm. Yeah, and then so this is a 21st game that comes out. Star Fox comes out before this. Cruising USA comes out before this.
Hang Time.
Yeah, I think so. Mario Kart 64 comes out in like February, March of that year.
God, I had like none of these games.
Yeah, I had.
Hang Time was fun.
I didn't have Mario Kart, but I did have Shadows of the Empire, Cruising USA, and Mario 64, and Pilot Wings, I think. But yeah, this game comes out and it's crazy. So one thing I do want to talk about right now is I'm not a big fan of Bond movies. I've never really watched Bond movies. Have you guys watched a lot of Bond movies?
I've seen them all.
You've seen them all?
Yeah.
Have you seen them all?
No, absolutely not.
Are you a fan of Bond movies at all?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was my parents growing up, you know, they, you know, wasn't introduced to that shit. I was watching movies like Rookie of the Year and Disney movies and all this crap. But then, you know, getting older, you start to hang out with different people, and it's like, oh my God, you never saw this, you never saw this. So I've watched a lot of Bond movies the last 10 or 15 years, but certainly not every one. And right. I couldn't tell you, you know, characters and all that crap.
See, that's kind of because the three of us have a mutual friend that is obsessed with the Bond movies. And that is kind of how I ended up seeing all of them, was through him. So
does Andy still have all his VHSs and DVDs?
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, so for this podcast, I was telling you guys earlier that I've watched The Living Daylights, I watched License to Kill, GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and The World Is Not Enough. Just for this to talk about this podcast.
No Skyfall?
No. Skyfall's I was going great. From GoldenEye.
Skyfall's fantastic.
Skyfall's great.
From GoldenEye, I was going up and down. So I was going up and down chronologically. Mm. And Timothy Dalton is terrible. Just wanted to put it out there.
What about the guy with the ugly face? The bad
George
guy?
Lazen? Oh.
What the hell's his name? He's got like a scar or something on his face?
Yeah, he's
Blofeld?
He's like the 80s bad guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that takes you right back and you're like, ugh. I'm going to shake my fist at you.
That movie especially is really bad. License to Kill is so bad.
You know what's a great British movie? Moonraker.
Moonraker.
Not what you were expecting.
I was expecting Monty Python.
I was going to say Shaun of the Dead?
No, that's a Simpsons quote, except he says a different Bond.
Oh, okay. No, I've not watched Moonraker yet. So.
Really? That's the one where Jaws talks at the end.
Oh.
He gets a girlfriend, and it ends with him cheersing to us. And then the Moonraker satellite pulls up. To us.
So, I want to watch more of these, but some of them are pretty bad. Like, pretty bad. Like, License to Kill is a really bad movie. Like, really
That was
bad.
A money grab. They had Pierce Brosnan killing it in the Bond series.
Oh, no. You know? This is Timothy Dalton, not 89. It was just really bad.
Oh.
But, yeah, there's a bunch of Pierce Brosnan ones that are bad. Like, World Is Not
Yeah, What's the bad. One with Halle Berry called?
Oh, Die Another Day.
All right.
Yeah, they're all terrible outside of GoldenEye, the Pierce Brosnan ones. No, they're terrible.
Yeah.
They're terrible. GoldenEye is fantastic, and the rest are terrible.
He's better than Timothy Dalton, though.
Sure, yep. But the Pierce Brosnan ones are terrible after GoldenEye.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, because I was like, because, like, prior to watching these movies, I had only seen GoldenEye, like, a whole bunch. I'm of all the Bond movies.
I've never had Christmas in Turkey.
So, for me, I was like, Pierce Brosnan is so good as Bond. But then I started watching, like, Tomorrow Never Dies and World Is Not Enough. I was like, this is real bad. And who ever decided to cast Denise Richards? Because she's terrible at acting. She's real bad.
Oh, yeah.
Eye candy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Casino Royale is fantastic. And so is Skyfall.
Aramov.
Who's the bumper? That's what it's for.
Chris does not want to talk about Wild Things.
No, I want to talk about Aramov.
So, back to this game for a little bit. So, this game, it's funny looking at GoldenEye, because it's... Growing up, I was born in 83. The movie came out in 96, right?
95.
Mm-hmm. So I was 12 when this movie came out, or maybe 11. And I had never known a Bond before this, because the Bond before that was in 89. So it was, I was too mm-hmm. young to understand what that was. And so Pierce Brosnan for me was James Bond. And think for our generation, because there was that big gap in between releases, at least. But I don't. Do you feel that way at all?
Do you understand what I'm saying? My parents already had me watching the Roger Moore
really?
Movies and the Sean Connery ones. Wow. So I was already familiar with Bond.
Okay.
Nancy.
Well, more Robert.
Robert.
Yeah, more Robert.
Your
Robert.
Yeah. Yes.
Come along, son. Let's watch some James Bond.
Everybody likes Sean Connery, but Roger Moore, he kind of more speaks to me.
Roger Moore speaks to me in depth.
That's a very dad quote. See, my dad had me watching like Alien movies and Predator and
Conan the Barbarian.
Stargate. He was more sci-fi.
Oh, Stargate.
My dad would be like, Platoon, sweet.
No, it's funny because like I think about my new child and I'm like, what am I going to introduce them to?
Starship Troopers?
Are they going to like watch stuff? And like my dad would let me watch, like I remember watching Aliens when I was like 4 or 3. And like being scared out of my mind and having nightmares for days from having this alien chest burster coming out of my chest. Like, swear to God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my generation. My dad just let me watch everything. Yeah. Remember watching Top Gun when it came out?
Well, except wrestling, because I heard your last podcast. Your parents wouldn't let you watch wrestling.
Let me watch any movie that I wanted, but wrestling, they would not let me watch because they thought I was too low class.
Wow.
Swear to God.
God damn it.
So I had to watch. I had to tape Nitro because I couldn't watch Raw. So I like secretly set up the VCR to record so that it would record the 1 o'clock showing of Nitro, because they used to show it twice.
Yeah.
And then I also had to watch WWF Saturday morning wrestling. Superstars.
God.
Oh dear.
So that's what I was relegated to.
When I got diabetes in fourth grade, my mom said, "You can watch The Simpsons now." And to me, that was the best. It was like, all right, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Now that you have diabetes, you're
now that you have diabetes, son. we're not gonna. Yeah,
you can handle everyone. The Simpsons.
You're a man.
This podcast is a mess. So
it's so bad.
Yes, it is. This is the it's so bad. It's so bad. So 8 million copies this sold worldwide. It is. Has more copies sold than Ocarina of Time, GoldenEye, the game.
Oh, believe that.
So it's also the third best-selling N64 game of all time. The best-selling N64 game not developed by Nintendo.
Oh.
And it sold more copies in the U.S. than both Mario 64, Mario Kart, and Ocarina of Time in the U.S.
Really?
Crazy, this game.
Mario 64 is the only one that kind of surprised me on that list.
And also, like, just thinking about where this sits in the first-person shooter genre, had you guys played a first-person shooter before this? Because there's not many people that I think that did. I think this was...
No, I played Wolfenstein. Wolfenstein and Doom. You did? I played a ton of Wolfenstein before this.
But there's a ton of people that didn't have PCs, and did you have a PC, Dan?
Yeah, but I was playing, like, SimCity and shit like that, and, like, you know, I wasn't shooting anybody.
So this is, like, the first... Do you think this is the first first-person shooter?
Absolutely.
So, I didn't have a PC. I played Wolfenstein at my neighbor's house. Actually, I had a friend that I'm not friends with anymore. But
why not?
But I remember he used to get grounded a lot. And I would have to state this because he was a rabble rouser. Probably why we're not friends anymore.
Yeah,
you know, bad influence. And his parents had like a shit ton of money. And he had a really nice PC. And he had like Quake and stuff like that. And I was playing that sort of stuff, and I didn't even know how to handle that.
My parents had a 75 megahertz Pentium processor computer that they bought in 1992 or 1993.
So you were playing Myst.
I was playing Doom. I was definitely playing Doom. I think I tried playing Myst, but I remember it came with Journeyman Project Turbo. I definitely was playing that. And it also had the music video for it came, I think all Windows 95 machines at that time, because it was Windows 95, came with Weezer's Buddy Holly music video
really?
That you could play.
Yes. Wow. When I got my iMac, it came with a copy of the movie Ants.
I think I had
13 gigs, bro.
I think I had Web TV at the time. I think that's what I had.
So I actually too, I played Doom, but I remember Doom 2 more. And I used to try to play. I remember we couldn't figure out how to do it, but we tried to play modem to modem. Me and Mickey, down the street, we'd play modem to modem games, and Doom 2 was one of them. We could never figure out how to get it to work.
Then. Yeah.
So we played. I played Doom 2. I think I played Duke Nukem, which came out before this game. Came out in January of 1996.
So I played that.
Year before this. Quake came out a year before this as well. Turok Dinosaur Hunter came out a couple months before this.
Yeah, we've already established that's bullshit.
And I had that game.
Rare.
And if you had that game at the time, you were like, this game's fucking sweet. It's a first-person shooter.
I didn't think that at all.
The word sweet never entered my mind playing Turok.
I liked it. I don't know.
I just remember the dirt sheets, like GamePro and Ten of Power saying it was the greatest thing ever. I remember renting it going like, this game is garbage. Hot garbage.
I just remember you couldn't see more than like 20 feet in front of you because of fog. It was real.
Yeah, get me some Krusty's Funhouse back up in here.
Yeah, it was really.
Oh my god, I was playing Krusty's Funhouse.
Is this a reference to the last podcast? Or are you bringing it back? Because we talked about Krusty's Funhouse in the last.
Oh, podcast. You know what? Yeah. You did, but I recently found Krusty's Funhouse in my parents' basement, so it's kind of like sticking in my head.
Genesis, Super Nintendo.
When people talk about, you know, I listen to the podcast and people talk about, oh, I love this game so much. I'm like, all right, I'll fucking plug it in. I'll play it for 10 minutes and be like, what the fuck are these people thinking? You know, like.
But after this game, did you guys ever play Rainbow Six on N64?
I must have.
So that came out in 1998, a year later. And then you had Half-Life came out a year later, too.
I remember Half-Life on PC.
Yeah, yeah. I never played the original. I played 2, though. Tribes, which is a big one, came out 2 years after this, and Medal of Honor came out 3 years after this. Kind of like the notable first-person shooter games. People always
Perfect Dark.
That came out in 2000.
Oh,
is that a Rare game?
Yeah,
that was like the spiritual successor to GoldenEye. But I'm sure we'll touch on that later.
So we decided to talk about this like 3 weeks ago, and in that time period, there's been a shitload of shit that's come out about the development of this game. Mm. Because people were obviously, there's bugs in my house where people listen to the conversations that I have.
Good little oral history came out.
Yeah, so Mel
That's
Magazine.
The old Smart TV, you know, Google thing. They're always listening to you.
Yeah.
You know, this.
My TV, the local broadcaster, not Web TV. Mel Magazine, which is like, I don't even know what it is, but they printed out oral history of the game.
Yeah.
And they were talking to Martin Hollis and a bunch of the developers on that project. So this game came out, it was the next game after Rare developed Killer Instinct. Do you guys remember Killer Instinct?
Yeah, garbage.
I was really upset when I did not get that game for my birthday 1 year. Really upset.
Yeah. I remember renting it and thinking like, oh, this is okay, you know, but Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat were, you know,
I was like, well, this is no Pit Fighter.
So they developed Donkey Kong Country, they developed Killer Instinct, and they had to go to work on this game. This is their first 3D game. It's a 10-person development team. No experience developing games. So they hired a bunch of people to develop this game, and they all pretty much didn't have experience in making games, and no one had experience making 3D games. So they had to develop from scratch the engine that runs this, and they had to develop from scratch all of the ideas to make a 3D game. And they were drawing a lot from, I think, Mario 64 is what they said a lot of the time. That's why there is also objectives in this game, because they saw that each Mario 64 level had an objective. So they were like, oh, we should put objectives in games, which wasn't a thing for first-person shooters at the time, which was pretty crazy.
Well, what else would you do? You just
run to the end of the level. That was what Doom was.
Yeah, begin to end, right?
Yeah, so this game, you have to find stupid little keys that are sticking around,
right,
or circuit boards, or DAT cassettes, or video VHS tapes for some reason.
This is a TurboGrafx-16 VHS tape.
It's
hidden in the facility.
It's in the dirtiest toilet in the facility. Well, it was like, what about the objectives with this? It's like, we were kind of talking about this outside of the podcast, like, earlier, is that, like, they were timed objectives for the most part. Well, I mean, you had objectives to clear the mission, you had bonus goals that would unlock cheat codes that were timed. You were basically like they were basically making you speed run the game to unlock those cheats and to achieve those
other goals. Which is like one of the first times I've ever remember thinking that this is a thing in a game.
I don't remember any time before that.
Yeah, so you could unlock cheats by doing specific challenges, and they were all typically time restricted. So if one of them, I think, is you have to beat the dam in 2 minutes to unlock something. I forget what it is.
I think it's even less than that. It's like when you get like the 00 level. Yeah, like
right.
That's so
I remember
funny.
Like it was like you had to basically run that level perfect. I just remember like
over and over again doing the same level.
And I can still remember like going like, okay, like, well, I got to shoot this guy once, even though it's not going to kill him. I need to shoot him once to stagger him because I can't waste time shooting him twice. And just like strafing, like
I remember feeling really bad because other of my friends, including yourself, had fully unlocked cheats, and I was like, "Fuck, I haven't even fucking unlocked Aztec yet," or whatever the fuck the bonus stages were that you had to get if you wanted to if you defeated it at the hardest difficulty.
Yeah, well, your priorities were out of whack, so that's all right,
dude. Unlock Aztec.
Yes, seriously.
Yeah, stopping the dickhead.
So I think when the development company, and what I've read about the development company, when they were making this, they originally wanted to make it a side-scrolling game, and they were inspired. And then they changed it, and they wanted to make something that was kind of like Virtua Cop. Mm-hmm. And that's why the look of the game kind of looks like Virtua Cop.
Yeah.
The big blocky polygonal people.
Well, that was big at the time.
Yeah. So, and then they decided, well, fuck it. We're going to go for a first-person shooter, and we're going to make a different game. So they developed their own 3D engine. They worked 80 hours typically per week, which whenever somebody says that they work for 80 hours, I'm always like, did you really work 80 hours?
Cause that's fucking
that's
bullshit.
A fucking lot of work a week.
It's at least like 2 hours of pizza eating and ice cream socials at work and bullshit like that.
Seriously.
Yeah.
80
yeah.
hours.
Ugh, I gotta read my emails. That ain't fucking work.
Somebody definitely inflated that number, but
Nintendo wasn't even like funding the project for like 3 months.
Yeah, it was... So Nintendo did fund this project, which is really fucking interesting.
But they stopped for a little bit.
Yeah, they did. They stopped towards the end because they weren't seeing progress on it. But if you think about it, imagine in 1997, Nintendo funding a first-person shooter game. How fucking insane is that? Whatever they made before that is Super Mario 64. They made Super Mario World. They made Super Metroid. They made all these other games. And then they're going to make a realistic shooter? It's pretty crazy, I think.
Pretty bold.
Yeah, it's different. Shigeru Miyamoto was actually consulting on this project, too. And I think one of his things that he said was, originally they had, when you shot a guy, blood would splatter out and come out of the person, and they toned it down. So when you shoot somebody, you actually see it darkens on the person, and that's kind of like an innovation for the time. They also have, like, if you shoot somebody, the person staggers, or they'll, like, depending on where you shoot them.
You shoot a guy in the throat in this game. They hold, like, their throats.
But there's animation that never happened before, because because Quake was never, like, cinematic like that, and Doom was never cinematic like that. So they had, Rare had individual employees. There was one guy who acted out each one of those hits. He put on the ping pong balls to do the motion cap of the of taking the hit on the leg, and he fell over. And there's another, he did the same thing with like the neck, and he did the same thing with the head. So there was one guy at Rare who motion captured all of this stuff.
So was, as far as like the motion capturing thing, was GoldenEye one of the first?
I don't know. Like, I don't think so.
Because what about Duke Nukem? Was that before or after?
That's polygonal. It wasn't motion captured, so it wasn't 3D. So it's just flat people that you'd run up
to. But they go back. In Doom, they go back, no?
Yeah, but it's just animation. It's just straight animation. Right. It's not like somebody...
Did those really crappy Nintendo 64 Mortal Kombat games come up before this?
No, I don't think so.
Because they had... yeah, all right. Never
mind. Like Sub-Zero, the Mortal Kombat game that came out in 64. That game was terrible.
I rented it, probably played it an hour, just left it for the weekend.
But yes, so this game did have like these innovative features of like having people who actually motion captured. All of the people have faces in this game.
The developers'
yep. faces. One of the things too is that this was such an early first-person shooter, and they wanted realism. That they wanted that all the guns they wanted to have real names for. They changed all the names except for I think the PPK.
They were worried about
the legal ramifications.
We're regal and legal.
Yeah.
On the same way.
The Regal Legals.
This podcast.
So, the club.
Is that a British lawyer?
So, do you know about it? So, Chris, do you know about the club?
No. Don't put me on the spot like that.
So, the club is a.
I do.
Is a gun in the game, right?
Yes.
And it's really shitty. It's the shittiest gun in the game. It's super scattershot. And it's not very accurate. They named it after a Nintendo ambassador, or vice president at Nintendo, who was representing them, whose name was Ken Lobb.
Wow, I expected a Japanese name.
Because they thought that he was wild. Hmm. That's actually something that happened in the game.
Wow.
Do you know about the Walter PPK?
Isn't that a real gun?
There are three men in the world, and I don't use it. I believe I've killed two.
006.
No, that was a GoldenEye quote.
Okay.
When Bond puts the gun.
You're not up on your quotes, bro.
Yep.
Who are the other two?
He doesn't say. He just says he's killed the other two.
God damn it. So one of the things too, as I was mentioning that Shigeru Miyamoto was like, this game's too violent. One of the ideas that he floated past Martin Hollis, the director of the game, was that after the end of the game, he wanted in the credits for James Bond to be shaking the hands of the bad guys to make sure that people realize that this was actually just a play that they were acting out, not a real thing where he was killing people. That is actually something that Shigeru Miyamoto asked for.
You know.
What a fucking jerk.
But, you know, is that why?
It's no like violence!
The cinema style, like, going into the levels and, like, all the different levels, like the level selection is like a film strip style. Is that kind of like a compromise on that?
Oh, maybe. But the direct quote from Martin Hollis, who was the director, he said he suggested that it might be nice if at the end of the game you got to shake hands with all your enemies in a hospital.
Oh, no.
I think that's...
That would be nice.
It's similar to like Super Mario Brothers 3, where they have the curtain.
Stage play.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a stage play, that right. game.
Like Seth Rollins and Finn Balor both being in rehab together. Remember that?
No.
Finn Balor, when he hurt his shoulder on the thing, on the buckle bomb.
Yeah, they were taking.
And then Seth Rollins was struggling to make it to WrestleMania for the second year in a row. And they were sitting there throwing the medicine balls together, being like, well, hey, how awkward is this, right, guy?
Oh, yes, I remember this sort of.
If you still have the network, you would...
Yeah, if you still have the fucking network, you'd know.
Well, let's just talk about something else for a second. So the single-player game in this... So the multiplayer game was developed in like a month. Did you guys realize this?
Yes.
I obviously no idea.
So... So Nintendo was like, yo, what the fuck is going on, Rare? Why aren't you making this? And they stopped their funding of the game. So in the last month, Rare was like told one guy to be like, hey, we need you to develop out this multiplayer. And he was like, all right. So he made a multiplayer by himself, a multiplayer game. So that game we were just playing an hour ago was developed by one guy using existing assets that they made for the single player game.
He deserves a lot of credit. I mean,
yes.
As far as multiplayers go, on a scale of 1 to 10, got to be a 10 on the success rate, man.
Yep. Hell yeah.
You know?
Game changing.
People, 21 years later, people still playing it. Same shit, same characters.
Yep.
Absolutely. As we were saying earlier, this game was one of the first four-player experiences for the four-player specific N64. And it was... it's a fucking mind blowing when this game came out. It's incredible that one guy made this. I guess one of the things that really helped them as a development company is they would play the games constantly to test it as a development group.
Imagine that.
Yeah, it's insane. So one of the big stories is that they had a group of four people, and originally this game was supposed to have four James Bonds. So it was supposed to have Pierce Brosnan, Timothy Dalton, Roger Moore and Sean Connery as playable characters.
Wow. Get that
George Lazenby shit out of here.
They couldn't get the licensing for those three, the other three. They had one for Pierce Brosnan, obviously.
I want more money.
And they, in multiplayer, before this game came out, in order to test it, they had an hour-long death match between four guys who were on the development team to test it.
And first they, to 100, right?
Yeah, the first it was 3 hour long, because it was the first to 100 player.
And God.
And they each played as a specific Bond character. And I think in the end, a Roger Moore won, I think. Mm. It was who was the final person.
Just the way God intended.
Person left alive. So there's a bunch of stuff that's in the multiplayer that developed from the multiplayer because of this was a month-long thing, and they made it based upon feedback from other developers. So I was mentioning in Complex, for example, there are lockers that you can hide in that have a normal front, but you can walk through the wall. And the developer made that because he wanted to make a hiding place for himself so he could hide against people that he was playing against. It's fucking crazy. Could you imagine this shit happening in 2018? It would never get past anything.
Right.
Because there's so much, corporations are so big that they would never make the stupid shit that's in these games.
Yeah, we'll find that in Halo.
But yeah, so I mean, this game was super innovative and super, like, first console FPS that came out where you were like, oh, this is actually fun to play. Like, Doom came out on Super Nintendo. Nobody played it because that game sucked on Super Nintendo. I have Doom on 32X, the Genesis game, first off. Nobody had 32X. And second off, they had it in a little box. It was terrible.
But, you know, not even that. It's like, the grenade launcher, you're bouncing the grenades off the walls. Like, whether you're playing
Remote mines, proximity mines.
Just shooting the rockets at your friends. Like, you even take that away from, like, the single-player game. Just, like, when you're, like, you're doing these trick shots with the grenade launcher, like, in all these different levels. Like, you know one of your friends is hiding somewhere. And, like, you're bouncing it, like, off the wall and angling it just right, and you nail them. That's awesome. That, yep. Like, that didn't exist before. And
you,
like,
you load up the bathroom with proximity mines, yeah, and your buddy regenerates inside the vent.
Yeah, you trap him in.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
Multiplayer was great. But it's just the single player, too. I mean, I played through, I think, in the preparation for this game, I didn't beat the game, but I played through, like, half the game. And just at the time, there was no cinematic stuff. There were no real games with objectives. I mean, I remember at the time Star Wars Dark Forces being a thing. That game had objectives, but no one really played that game because not a lot of people had PCs that could play that stuff at the time.
But if you want to get into that realm, we can talk about TIE Fighter, though, someday.
No, well, that's going to be on the list. That's definitely...
Did
you have TIE Fighter back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
And Chris will be back for his fifth episode. TIE Fighter.
Yeah, I will.
But, I mean, think about this. You're 1997, right? You're playing this game for, like, the first time, and you're in a vent, and you're about to come down and try to shoot a guy who's taking a shit, supposedly. On a toilet.
Well, he's just standing there.
So imagine growing up with Super Nintendo and Nintendo, and then coming up to this point where you can see a scenario where you're a guy who's coming down a vent and shooting a guy who's on the crapper.
But he's standing there.
Are his pants down?
In the movie, he's sitting there.
But
he's not shitting.
But in the game, when you're in the vent, it's hard to tell what he's doing.
He's patrolling.
Well, you know, you start getting into your deviant imagination, you can put anything together.
Nevertheless, just imagine you're seeing a toilet first in a video game. Was crazy because I remember playing.
Is that the first?
Booger
Man was out on SNES
in Earthworm Jim.
In Duke Nukem, you could flush the toilet. I remember that.
Yeah,
and you could also give a stripper a money, and they would open themselves up and shake their boobs.
Awesome.
That's something that also could happen in Duke Nukem. I had that game at some point too before this game, which was crazy because no one had these games at the time. But just think about this. So like the whole, you're in an event, you bounce out on somebody. It's very like, you're like actually in a story for a first person shooter, and it's not just like kill everybody. It's this game is very, very different for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get that across to somebody who's just understands games in 2018, where there's a million different experiences and there's thousands of different things you could play. This game was mind-blowing at the time.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, even too, when you compare it to, like, even, like, modern first-person shooters, like, Wolfenstein has come back out, Doom, all the Call of Duty games, all that stuff, like, and Halo and stuff, like, yeah, they got objectives, but, like, those objectives are not nearly as intricate, I feel, or as, like, defined as GoldenEye's is. It's like, because it's kind of like a mix of, like, you go in the facility level, for example, like, as, like, a combination of stealth and shooting. Like, you know,
I would just say these, like, GoldenEye, like, they had a really cool idea with doing the objectives, but the objectives were bad. They were hard.
Right. I don't know. You play, like, Halo, it's like, it feels very linear. Like, they tell you there's objectives, but it's basically very linear. Right. When you play the new Wolfenstein game.
Have you played that game, though?
Yeah, I haven't.
Oh, the first one, the New Order or the New Colossus?
Whatever the newest one is. I have that. And it's like...
Wow. I just beat that recently.
Same thing with like that and Doom.
That sounds like another episode for Chris.
It sounds like... Oh, no, I mean, I like it, but like it feels very much like, okay, like you're going to an area. Go from one to the other. You got to clear an area. Story progresses.
Right.
Go to another area. You got to clear it. In GoldenEye, I felt like you could play a level like... multiple different ways.
Right.
Like, you can play the facility like running through, killing everybody, taking everybody on. Or you can do it like... kind of stealthy and like work your way through it.
Yes, absolutely. Which was different, like completely different for the time. So, yes, it was very different. I will say, so playing, the funny thing is, speaking of Wolfenstein, the New Colossus, I just beat that game. Great story, really liked it. Gameplay sucked.
Yeah, kind of wears on me.
So, it was. Like, they want you to stealth some of that game.
That's not Wolfenstein.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did you play Doom?
That's not Wolfenstein.
Did you play Doom 2016? The 2016?
Yeah, I have that too.
That game is super fun because they just want you to go balls to the wall as fast as possible. Wolfenstein's like, no, you have to go a little bit slow. And getting back to GoldenEye, sometimes when you're like going through these maps, for me, trying to find the objectives sometimes was like super, super cryptic. Like, I could not figure out what to do in some of these things.
Like, which ones?
Both the Severnaya, like, on top of the base levels that are, like, outside and just terrible. The Severnaya outside levels, just terrible. They're just not good.
Yes.
Inside the wooden log cabins.
Yeah, no surprise you can't unlock Aztec.
Ugh, it's so bad. Those levels are really bad. I will say some of the Severnaya base levels also, where you have to find the VHS tape and destroy the security cameras. It's like, come on.
See, I like those levels. I really like the ship level. That's a good one.
The ship level was okay.
The level that I kind of went back and forth on was the missile silo level.
Statue is really, really bad. Statue.
But I liked it for like the encounter you have with Trevelyan at the end.
Oh, okay.
Because that was like one of my favorite parts in the movie, and I like how it played out in the video game. The level like I really hated in the game was jungle. I fucking hate jungle.
I didn't make it that far. It was like that's the very end. Right?
Jungle, and it goes like jungle, and then caverns, and then like those two levels sucked. Like the cavern level like really sucked. Because it's like that underground base level, and it's like those like those automated wall-mounted guns.
Oh, fuck those
things. Can just like pick you off from so fucking far away. Yeah. And I remember hating that. But then you get to the last level, you get to the cradle. Like that was like the most epic final level to me in a shooter game, where you chase Trevelyan around the cradle.
The satellite, yeah. One thing too, I mentioned that all four at the time 007s were in that game. So there's one like glaring omission from this game that is really small if you haven't watched the movie.
Jack Wade?
Yeah. Why isn't Jack Wade in the game?
Because he wouldn't give his rights up.
Wow.
Jack Wade, the CIA operative.
And here we are in America freezing our ass off.
Yeah.
Show me the rose.
So he's not only in GoldenEye, but he's in Tomorrow Never Dies. Do you know what other movie he's in?
Well, I have a personal theory in my old headcanon that Jack Wade is also JW from the Roger Moore movies. Like, he's like the kind of like the very racist sheriff who Roger Moore keeps encountering in about two or three movies, including Moonraker and Live and Let Die. Because he's Sheriff JW, and they carry themselves very much the same way. So I have a personal theory that they are the same character.
Well, sir, Jack Wade, the actor who plays Jack Wade, is also the main villain in The Living Daylights. So take that. Stick that in your piping smoky.
Put that in your piping smoky.
So, yes, that actor was the bad guy who had miniatures of
the actor, not the character.
No.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
My headcanon is that he was the arms dealer and then he went on to be a CIA operative, at least in my headcanon.
Yeah.
Also, lead singer in the White Stripes.
That's Jack White. Jack White. And you know how I remember that? Because
the band's called the White Stripes.
I thought it was the Wade Stripes. Dickhead, huh?
But yes, I mean, this game is like, I think just for when it came out, it is crazy how innovative this game is. You have a development team that's never made a 3D game. Hasn't made games. It's a development team that hasn't made games. They're from the UK. There's not like a big gaming scene in the UK where at this time. Where
still playing Tetris
games.
In the UK at that time, right? 97?
ZX Spectrum, which was featured as an emulator.
Because they used to make games. Ultimate. And they used to. Master Gamers. Those are their names.
Ultimate Play the Game.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yes, that was the certain name.
Yeah.
But they used to make ZX Spectrum games back in the day. Only Barton Hollis, I think, was actually making those games. Mm. There was no one else. And they hired all these people to make this game because Nintendo gave them money. And
they said, Crikey, how the hell are we going to make this 3D game? This is crazy.
They're not Australian.
Oh. Oh, my God. Hey.
Your mother-in-law is British, and you have...
Like, what normally would be a cinematic in a game now is, like... It was part of the gameplay in like the so what I'm thinking of is like the part of the movie where Orimov shoots Mishkin when they're interrogating Bond and Natalia, and like, but in the, if a game now came out, that'd be like a cinematic,
maybe, like some games it'd be like 50-50,
but
yeah,
this is like,
I understand what
you
gotta
play Bond, you gotta take the gun up, you gotta shoot the right people, Orimov's gonna run out after he shoots Mishkin.
Right.
And like, you gotta get that part right. Or like when the train level ends and it's like you gotta like act that out like the way they acted out in the movie. If you shoot the villains and they execute Natalia or you kill you kill Armov in that part, like you failed the mission. Like, I thought that was like really like it, I feel like you don't even see that now anymore in games.
Right. No, that was cool.
Yeah, that's that's like a lot of like very innovative stuff, and it's like giving you that much control over like a particular scene, like the fact that like, you're watching the dialogue to play out to like end a level, but you can just like completely fuck it up and just like shoot somebody in it, or like,
I do like too that if you fail a mission objective, you can keep playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Indefinitely.
Like GTA style, just go off in your own little tangent.
Yeah, so if like now in modern games, if you failed an objective, it'd be like, you failed, and it'd be big on the screen.
Yeah, that's the end of it.
That's the end of it, and restart you. This game was like, oh, you fucked up an objective, but keep playing if you want to.
I guarantee all of us in this room, like at the train level, like tried to kill Trevelyan or Orimov, and then try to rush into the back of that train before the door closes.
I don't remember.
Because then the train blows up. You need Natalia alive.
Yes.
And then you have to like get out of the train, but like if you fuck it up, then like she dies, and you're just stuck there until the train blows up.
Yeah. And she sucked. She gets in the way a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking Natalia.
Yeah, there's levels where she follows you.
Yes.
That ain't no good.
It's miserable.
Yeah, and they always end up shooting her by accident.
Yeah. Then Resident Evil 4 is like, you know what? We should bring that back.
Resident Evil 4, though, is one of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah, except for the parts where the president's daughter is following you around.
Well, her name is Ashley, I believe. And she is awesome. I beat that game like last year.
The Wii version is awesome.
That game is really good. We should talk about that game someday.
Yeah. I'll be back in episode 9, Dan. I'm up to 9.
So, do you guys remember, what is your favorite multiplayer level? Do you remember?
Facility. It has to be the facility. It's the most familiar. It is...
What about Complex? What about Stack?
I would say Facility, if it's just you and your buddy, it's small, it's everything's tight, you know, that's good. Four players, you go Complex, you go Temple, you go the big ones. You know, they're twice as big.
I feel like Stack was like the level.
Oh, no.
With those,
not in my humble opinion. With those three rooms? Woburn opinion.
The three rooms. I feel like the Stack was the big one.
The big one?
Yes.
Like the most popular or the largest?
No, Facility was.
Facility, 100%.
Really?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
Because my favorite multiplayer level, and, you know, it's too bad your windows aren't open because it's about to get hot in here. My favorite multiplayer level was the perfect dark version of the Facility.
Get the fuck out of here. Sleep!
It's the exact same level, but much cooler weapons in the perfect dark version.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know.
That game did come out 5 years later, so.
Perfect Dark did come out 5 years later.
They had some good time.
The problem with Perfect Dark is you're not James Bond.
Yes. Right? But.
You're Joanna Dark, which is.
You know, the single player game.
I'm sure she's just as talented
was okay.
as James.
The single player game was okay. Not as good as the GoldenEye one, but, you know. This is where I'm going full heel on this podcast. The multiplayer in Perfect Dark, I prefer over the GoldenEye multiplayer.
There's AI in Perfect Dark.
You can add the bots.
Yeah. I'm sure it was brushed up. You know, they had time to clean it up.
No, it's very. They carried some of the GoldenEye.
So if it's the same damn thing,
over.
Why do you like it so much?
Well, because you can add the bots. That was the first time you could probably play and have like 30 people running around. You could, and like they had like one gun in particular. That was like not like a club style gun, but kind of like the perfect dark version, like a machine gun, but had a secondary function where you could attach it to the wall, and it would shoot anybody who ran by it, and that was just the best to me. And I would love to set that up in the facility bathroom. So that's where I'm coming in saying that my favorite multiplayer level is the perfect dark version of the facility level.
Well,
if we're keeping it to GoldenEye, then you know, still the facility.
Tell us more about Perfect Dark.
Yeah, why don't you just talk about Perfect Dark?
Well, it's the part where like you gotta take an alien out.
Do you think
like an autopsy room?
Do you think the Perfect Dark is a better game than GoldenEye?
I think the multiplayer is better.
No, that's not what he asked.
As a game overall, no.
Do you think
GoldenEye is much better?
Do you think it goes on a list higher or lower?
No, GoldenEye is the much better game.
Because if we're gonna sit here and talk about Perfect Dark all night, we might as well add that to the ranking here.
I'm just saying, GoldenEye is the better total package.
There's a list that we have here on the podcast. And that's kind of what we do here, is we talk about the best games and we add them to our list of the best games. Chris, you're aware. Dan, you are aware. I have a board up on the wall right now. Current rankings of the games are that Legend of Zelda is number one right now. This is just games that we've talked about. It's ranking them by their own merits, so their gameplay, their music, their aesthetic, their graphics, how we can play them contemporarily. So like, is Legend of Zelda still a good game to play today? So these are all the things we consider in our rankings. And right now we have in our rankings that Legend of Zelda is number one. Also their influence. So Legend of Zelda is number one. Cuphead's number two.
Oh, shit.
Thank you. River City Ransom is number three. Final Fantasy VI is number four. Mortal Kombat is number five. WWE No Mercy for the N64 is number six. And number seven is Contra Hardcore.
Wait, which one was number two again? I had a stroke there for a second.
Number two is Cuphead.
Oh, shit.
So
Why is Cuphead so high?
It's a very good game.
Yeah, I guess. What, you know, even on your last episode, people were just like, Cuphead's number two?
Many people have said that, actually. Every time I talk about that. So that's why we actually instituted a rule that now... you have to wait 5 years until the release, till after the game's released in order to
add to the list. Well, great. Can we just fucking do it up the list now and just stop talking about it?
Well, listen, the list is subject to change. So we will eventually have an episode where we talk about where we want
to. Every other game is acceptable to be on a top video game list, except, you know.
Cuphead. Yeah, we're talking about it right now.
We're not going to change it now. Maybe number 20. We add number 25 to the list or after that.
Wow.
I'm thinking. But where do you think on this list?
Fake news.
Golden Eye goes.
I mean, you know, you hold things out of whack because of Cuphead. I mean, it's
personally, I like Cuphead there. I don't like where River City Ransom ended up. Looking at the list,
yeah, too high.
Too high.
Well, again, a dude who never unlocked Aztec. So, let's get on the fucking level here.
I unlocked Aztec. I never unlocked the one after Aztec. What was the one after Aztec?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. But anyway. I mean, if you didn't have GoldenEye, you don't have multiplayer in Halo.
It's true.
You don't have multiplayer in Call of Duty. Probably you don't have Perfect Dark.
You don't have the Call of Duty games that come out every year. And this is the same bullshit, or Battlefield, or Battlefront, or any of those games that come out literally every year now.
Yeah, but like back in the day, like, I mean, you know, the Call of Duty games were like big in the single player stuff, but I mean, I think Halo took a lot from GoldenEye's multiplayer. Then I think Call of Duty tried to go, well, we're going to take from that, so, you know, GoldenEye's the grandfather to Call of Duty.
Right.
Anyway, so.
Where do you think it goes?
So, I mean, I think right there, it's got to be number one and number two.
Number two. Totally agree.
You think it's number two?
Totally. Absolutely.
If it ain't Legend of Zelda at number one, I'm going to say it's number one. But, you know, it's kind of hard to argue.
You don't think it's better than Legend of Zelda?
Well, I think it's a better game than Legend of Zelda. But, you know, Legend of Zelda just...
You do?
Just,
you think it's a better game in 2018 than better than the Legend of Zelda? Because I don't.
No, what are the copies sold?
I mean, I think Legend of Zelda sold less, but I think at the time, because there wasn't any...
Right.
When the market came out. Yeah, that is. Yeah. So.
I mean, I think Legend of Zelda was just so... Seth's like a game changer, pun, and influencer, and...
Why was that a pun?
Because it's a game. It's a video game. Oh. Game changer.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
That was a weak
Come
pun. On. But yes.
Go unlock Aztec and keep up, will ya?
Go unlock Aztec. Get your memory card.
Hey, I got DK mode. That's...
We didn't even touch upon the fact that, like, one of the features they wanted to have was that you could take a rumble pack, like, and you would have to remove it and slam it back into the controller to reload your gun. Can you imagine how fucking terrible that would be?
Yes, that would be miserable. And also, so, do you know why they had DK mode in it?
Because it was rare.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until I was doing research. Because I'm an idiot.
If they left that rumble pack feature in, then I'd say it can go below Cuphead.
Yes.
Yep.
But, you know. No, I think it's right below Legend of Zelda.
I agree with you. I think it's number two on our list here. Do you think it's number two? Do we have a...
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Absolutely. Legend of Zelda has... It's just... The lineage behind The Legend of Zelda outweighs GoldenEye, but you can't underestimate GoldenEye's impact on the what we have now. You know, it was groundbreaking for its time, and look where we are here.
I mean, look, they keep trying to remake it. Like,
right?
They made like the
Wii and Xbox 360
one. They were going to do an Xbox Live HD remaster that went nowhere. You know.
So let me ask you this. Is this the best game made from a movie, so a licensed game from a movie. Can you think of any other games?
E.T.?
Batman.
Terrible.
Batman for the NES.
Did you think that's better than GoldenEye?
No,
I'm just saying it's a good one, though. Yeah, I'm not ready to commit to that yet.
I know. I'm telling you to think about this. There's the thing for PS2, which
I mean, we got to kind of spin off properties like Knights
of the
Old Republic.
No, common knowledge would tell you yes, because there's no... I mean, what... You know, what else do you think? Like, I remember playing Home Alone 2, you know? But, like, that was...
That game was terrible.
It was so shitty.
That game was like Bart versus the Space Mutants.
Dude, I mean, like, the suitcases and the vacuums would kill you. It was...
Stupid.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, True Lies in the SNES.
Tim Curry is in... awesome. Yeah, that game was pretty good. But is it better than GoldenEye?
I mean, is Lawnmower Man better than GoldenEye?
No. No.
I mean, is RoboCop 1, 2, or 3 better than GoldenEye?
Let me ask you this. T2, the arcade game, is that better than GoldenEye? Because I think that's the second best licensed game.
I mean, it's better than Cuphead.
No, it's not.
It is.
Yeah. We should talk about this.
Well, so Cuphead, what? Cuphead?
That Rambo 2 arcade game. It's better than Cuphead.
Yeah. Cuphead will...
That Rambo 2 arcade game, that was out like... Cuphead.
The on rails, well, side scrolling on rails shooter, you know.
It was at what's the arcade that's in Woburn?
The Bull Drum?
No. You know.
What arcade is in Woburn?
The franchise. What's it called?
Shane Douglas?
The one that's at the
Oh, Dave and Buster's.
Yes.
Oh no, I don't.
That's where
I don't...
Rambo was.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, no, I don't go there. Because
yeah. I'm
in my 30s.
I don't drive by anymore because there's too much traffic.
I also just want to say, too, speaking about Rambo and the James Bond series. So in The Living Daylights, James Bond definitely teams up with the Mujahideen to get released and support him in his efforts, like Rambo 3, which is fun. So... Osama bin Laden was helping James Bond and also Rambo in the 80s.
Yeah. You know what? You know, while we're talking about, you know, is this the best, you know, movie adaption? Actually, no. Spider-Man 2.
Do you think Spider-Man 2 is better than GoldenEye?
Oh, Spider-Man 2 is so fucking good.
I've never played it before, but I've heard
people...
You
never played it?
No, I've heard people say
I've
so.
I played Spider-Man for PS2.
Yeah.
That was really good, I thought.
Do you think that's better than GoldenEye?
I mean, I keep my PlayStation 2 hooked up for two... Well, now I only have one reason. So I used to keep my PS2 hooked up to a CRTV in my guitar room to play Fire Pro Wrestling Returns, which is now obsolete because of Fire Pro Wrestling World, and to play Spider-Man 2. And Spider-Man 2 is like, I just played it recently. Like, just like, it's GTA with Spider-Man.
But do you think it's better than GoldenEye?
Might be.
That's strong.
It's really good.
So it's way better than Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. No, like Spider-Man 2 is the best Spider-Man game, besides perhaps maybe the NES one that was produced by LGN, or put out by LGN. Just going to say.
Don't. Maximum Carnage, we already talked about, too, this episode.
So we've talked anything about, like, by LGN four. Doesn't even deserve to be on that
website. But no, really, like, I mean, Spider-Man 2 and GoldenEye are probably the two best movie... I mean, it's kind of hard to call it GoldenEye, like a movie tie-in, because it came out 2 years after the movie came out.
Yeah, but it's like the story... It follows the story, pretty much. I mean, there's...
With some extra shit, but yeah. But it's like... But I mean, yeah, Spider-Man 2 is the same thing. It's like, here's the story, but then they toss in a bunch of, like, extra comic book stuff. I don't know. They're both really good. That's a coin toss for me.
That's a good discussion topic, though.
That's a coin toss for me right there. Yeah.
There's also... I've never played it before, but...
I forgot about it.
I do want to play the Warriors for PS2.
Oh, I hear that. That is... I've never played it, but I hear that's very good.
Very good game, yeah.
But, you know, I'm gonna say Spider-Man 2 is probably, like, my top 12 favorite games ever.
Top 12?
Top 12.
Huh.
That's a crowded space.
That's an odd number.
Yeah,
wow. No, because I mean,
the top of that list must be heavy.
Is it number 12? Is that? Do you have a list somewhere?
Yeah.
I got some headcanon, but
I keep a list on my old iPad.
So, number 12, hey?
I'm gonna say it's number 12.
12 best game ever, huh?
It's probably somewhere between 10 and 12.
All right.
Maybe 11.
What's number 12?
What's number 12?
Gretzky.
River City Ransom?
No.
Cuphead.
I would say number 12 would probably be Godzilla 2 for the NES.
I'm glad we know your 12th best. We now have, officially, we'll have, after the end of this episode, 10 games on the list.
Yeah.
I'm really pumped to add a game.
9 good games.
I'm really pumped to add a game below Contra Hardcore. I'm really pumped. I'm really excited for that to happen someday. So we should get on that. Oh, you know what another game is that's licensed that is also supposedly really good, but I think I've played it only once, is Aladdin for Genesis.
I think Aladdin's better than Contra Hardcore, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it better than GoldenEye?
Oh, God, no.
No. No.
It's fun, but it's not better.
You know, I gotta say...
You're right, though. I forgot about that.
And, yeah. And Lion King for Genesis is also supposedly pretty good.
I've never played it. I've heard, you know...
Also, people, like, talk about Little Mermaid for the NES. Yeah,
that's yes. a good one.
Yeah. Oh, I've good one. Yes, I've heard
but it's not...
multiple good things about Little Mermaid for NES.
But not as good as...
Yeah, to kind of be honest here, I mean, like, a lot of people come on this podcast and they give Cuphead shit for being on there, but, like, really, like, the real true outlier on there is Contra Hardcore. And, Cuphead, it just showed up. It is not the second best game of all time.
Right.
On your budgeting list. But Contra Hardcore,
it's not a good game.
I mean,
no, that thing's gonna be 25 when it gets to 25.
Yep. Yeah, that thing's always gonna be
There are definitely games that are worse than it. It's not like this list is not the best games of all time. It's just the games.
You mean you
of
came
all
in
time.
And you yes. said, hey, would you rather play Contra Hardcore right now, or would you rather play Silver Surfer? I'm like, well, I'm going to take Silver Surfer.
Really? Because I'd rather play Contra Hardcore.
No.
Nah, dude, you'll get up to like 200, 300 episodes, and, you know, the list will look better. You know, Cuphead. You did Cuphead too early. That's the only problem.
Hey, where's Fortnite fall on this list? You did an episode about Fortnite and PUBG.
Yeah. Our rule is that we're not going to add it to the list anymore. Until there's actually 5 years since it's released.
So Cuphead needs to be erased? Is that not happening?
No, but it might be moved down eventually.
Yeah.
Well, the whole list is shit then. All of a sudden we can just change things years later?
Oh my fucking God. The list is always a subject to change. It is based upon our feelings at the time, and our feelings will change.
If
you played this in 1997 and you put in GoldenEye came out, you'd be like, GoldenEye is number one.
I've never played Cuphead.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know.
I guess I should play Cuphead.
From what I understand, Cuphead is not a bad game.
No,
but
it's
I mean, you
a
know,
good game.
This podcast is declaring that Cuphead is a better game than Final Fantasy VI, better game than Mortal Kombat. Better game than No Mercy.
I'm okay with this.
River City Ransom. I mean, hello.
So we're officially, we are adding GoldenEye to the list, and we're making it number 2.
Good.
Below Legend of Zelda.
Good. Good.
Excellent.
I 100% agree.
And now we have to figure out what next we're going to play, and what next we're going to talk about. This is It's So Bad, the podcast. That's the name of it, It's So Bad. You can find us on Twitter, It's So Bad Pod, at It's So Bad Pod. You can also find us on Gmail, it's at It's So Bad, or It's So Bad Pod at gmail.com as well. We get emails sometimes, not really, we don't really get emails, but you can email us if you wanted to. And we will have another episode in 2 weeks.
Do you get a little music bed you need to plug here?
Should I plug that?
Yeah, go ahead.
We have Mr. Chris over here, who goes by the
name... I'm an advocate. Just an advocate for Dos Chiquini Jr.
He has his project.
Dos Chiquini Jr. wears a mask.
Yeah, no, I don't have a project. I am just an advocate for Dos Chiquini Jr.
So there's an artist known as Dos Chiquini Jr.
If you go see Dos Chiquini Jr., though, he looks strangely like Chris.
I'm just an advocate.
I believe it.
But you can find Dos Chiquini Jr. at Dos Chiquini Jr. at Facebook.
At Facebook?
Well, you know, how are you?
On Facebook.
Yeah. Oof.
I mean, that's just how you tag shit in comments these days. You know,
Dos Chiquini Jr. provides us with the music. And thank you for that mysterious stranger for providing us with the music here.
He's good and mysterious.
On the It's So Bad podcast. Stranger. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and other devices. I think Podbean. There's a couple other ones. But subscribe to us if you like it. If you don't, you probably won't because it's really bad.
You got an aim?
Don't have an aim. Sandman for life.
Okay.
Sandman 521.
On AOL. But nevertheless, thank you for joining us. And thank you all, Dan and Chris, for joining me this evening.
Pleasure to be here as always, Mike. Thank you.
And smell you later.
I hope you'll come back at some point. But this has been It's So Bad.
I'll be here whenever you tell me to, so.